World leaders still plan to gather in Paris next week for a major conference on climate change. Communities around the world plan to observe the gathering with a global climate march on the weekend preceding, meaning this coming weekend, Thanksgiving weekend for us. One aspect of global climate march has changed. Police in Paris will not allow a march there due to the current security climate after the Paris terrorist attacks. But the march is on in other places, including in Eugene, where it is hosted by the organization Eugene 350. We have the three founders of Eugene 350 on the line with us. Patty Hine, welcome to The Exchange.
Thank you. It's nice to be here, Jeffrey.
And Deb McGee, welcome to you.
Good morning.
And Mary DeMocker, good to hear from you.
Good morning.
So I'm not sure who wants to take this first. Tell us about the birth of Eugene 350 and how it all came together.
Gladly. Two summers ago, we went to Portland for a rising tide event. It was a blockade with kayaktivists on the river under the bridge going to Vancouver, and with a lot of ralliers on the bridge, beautiful signs, and the message was, we want to keep oil, coal, and gas from having export infrastructure through Oregon. And the message was, none shall pass. And we met a Mary DeMocker there, my partner Deb McGee and I, and we met subsequent to that and said, what are you doing about climate? And she said, let's build a 350 chapter here in Eugene. Bill McKibben told her, you should just start doing something with people you know. Let's get after it. We can do this.
So, Mary DeMocker, tell us a bit about the Bill McKibben connection and the general goals of 350.org.
Well, I had spoken with Bill at one of the meetings of activists previous to that blockade that Patty was telling you about, and I had done an interview in the Sun magazine, so he was aware of my work, my writing, and what I asked him was, how should we best support moving forward with real climate recovery that's science-based and that's meaningful? And he said, you know, anything you can do with writing, anything you can do with organizing, but the bottom line was, get moving, move fast, make mistakes, and move on.
Let's talk about that goal, though, because Eugene 350 and 350.org, the larger organization, focused on 350 parts per million of carbon in the atmosphere. And Deb McGee, that's actually past now rather than future, isn't it?
Yes, we're over 400 parts per million of carbon dioxide pollution right now. But I think the good news is that the scientific community has worked out a plan, and we can, you know, incrementally by a certain percent begin to bring that back down to the upper livable limit of pollution, which is 350. And that's why we're named 350 as an organization, and that's also why we're working here locally and globally to bring the carbon emissions down so that we can have a livable future for our children and all the species.
How much harder is it, though, to reverse from 400 to 350 than to just sort of slow progress and try to stop at 350 and then reverse from there?
I think we are faced with a rather daunting problem, actually, because the carbon that we have already burned is, even if we stop now, going to continue to have temperature rise globally. So we are stuck with what we have already burned and the effects of that. And that, we hope, will stay under 2 degrees Celsius, which has been the international goal. That is still actually too high, really, for maintaining a livable planet as we have come to understand it. But we can mitigate the effects if we stop burning now and keep the 80% that scientists say we need to of known fossil fuel reserves in the ground. So stop digging, stop drilling, stop building infrastructure projects, and get right on to 100% renewables. That's possible, and it's our message, and that's what we're doing.
That phrase, keep it in the ground, has really come to the fore in the last 2 or 3 months, to my knowledge anyway, but it even ended up on a bill that Senator Jeff Merkley introduced in the Senate. So it seems like that's become the new rallying cry for fossil fuel use.
It's true. That is the number that has to stay in the ground, is 80% of those discovered fuels. You know, while here in Oregon we appreciate and thank Jeff Merkley for his leadership on this Keep It in the Ground bill, we also want to say to our Oregon representatives that there are fossil fuel infrastructure projects right here, two export terminals planned for liquefied natural gas that we need Merkley and all of our representatives to stand up and say, no, we don't want these export projects here in Oregon or any place. We have to keep it in the ground and get off of fossil fuels and onto 100% clean, renewable energy, and it's totally possible.
You're talking specifically about Jordan Cove?
Yeah, and one thing, this is Mary, one thing I wanted to note about that liquefied natural gas is that it's actually fracked gas, which is a huge difference between the more traditional ways that that people have been drilling for the natural gas. It's much more abusive to water systems and to the land systems, and it really poisons aquifers and people's wells.
You want to listen to our second hour, then. We're going to be talking to the Canadian journalist Andrew Nikiforuk about his book Slick Water, which is going to be our most comprehensive discussion of fracking yet, but we'll deal with that later. Right now, I want to remind our listeners we're talking to the founders of Eugene 350, a climate change group, Patty Hine and Deb McGee, co-founders with Mary DeMocker. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 on the phone and by email jx@jeffnet.org. How long, for any of you, has the work on the global climate march been going on?
Well, we've been planning ever since we heard that it was the UN Climate Summit was coming to Paris, and we attended a North American Leaders Convergence last March in Berkeley, and we've had conversations with about 40 of the 120 chapter leaders in North America, Canada, and United States about what the framework going to the UN climate talks was going to be for our movement. And so the grassroots movement that's now networked under 350.org has been laying out and executing a framework plan started in September on the 10th, where we launched a strategy talk with the framework off fossil fuels, on to clean energy. And that was followed by workshops in many of the cities nationwide to talk about what that strategy looked like and then look at the November 28th, 29th weekend for a major march before the talks. And then following the talks on December 12th, a mobilization and escalation event all over the globe that would say, this is our red line. We have said after the climate talks, we are not budging. We are getting off fossil fuels. We're moving on to clean energy. And that was the framework around the UN climate summit. And going forward to April and May, major momentum building and capacity building for direct action on the ground where the fossil fuel companies are actually creating the dangerous toxic chemicals and burning them. So that's the framework. We've been talking about it at least since September, and before that June, and then March earlier. So it's been coming for at least 6 months.
Direct action on the ground meaning what?
It means confronting the biggest fossil fuel carbon bombs on the planet. And the strategy is going forward with international big grassroots groups to decide what are the 10 major carbon bombs on planet Earth. There will be likely some strategic arrangement where different continents will have their own major carbon bomb. It's yet to be decided, but that will be a call to direct action grassroots activists to appear at the location where the destruction is happening to directly confront and shut down those operations that continue to endanger our health.
I want to make sure we're abundantly clear, because the word bomb at this moment in history can be a little scary for people. You're not talking an actual bomb, but when you say carbon bomb,
no,
I mean,
thank you.
Yeah.
No, exactly. We're just talking about looking at all over the world, what are the worst carbon pollution sources? And those are essentially dangerous, toxic operations, and that's why they're called that. Yeah, I agree. That's a tricky distinction.
So, I think it's fair to say, too, that direct action may include peaceful, dignified civil disobedience, if that is what we deem is appropriate and necessary to really, you know, confront these sources of toxins.
But
we're preparing for that as well.
All right. Not actually part of this weekend's particular activities involving the Global Climate March, though, right?
Correct. This is a family-friendly art build. In fact, we're actually creating an amazing art project that we have been accepted into the Paris Climate Art Show. So Eugene is going to be there in all of its beauty and colors and commitment.
How many communities around the world are sending stuff to this art show in Paris you just mentioned?
There are. It's called the Art COP 21, and it's a show that's curated through London, and it's called a Global Climate art festival. There are right now, last time I checked, there were 440 different events registered through the London site.
Mary, as I look at the information about Eugene 350, it seems like art is a major component always of what you do. Work that out a little for us.
Happy about that.
I mean, how is it represented? I mean, what is the combination of art and activism? Is it just to get eyeballs?
No, it's not just to get eyeballs in media. It's to express ourselves in ways that are fun and that are good for connecting as a community. For example, we had a work party just 2 days ago with about 24 high school students from South Eugene High School who came and did sunflower painting and decorated cookies that we're giving out at the march, and did a rehearsal in terms of the artistic element, the collaborative element that we're going to do on Saturday. We needed kind of a run-through, so they helped us with that and made a lot of colorful signs. So that was something that allowed us to connect with them and them to connect with one another, and then to connect with the public in ways that are different than the traditional angry march and shouting. We're looking for engagement, and we're looking for emotional resonance, and we're looking for community.
Mary DeMocker, Deb McGee, and Patty Hine are the founders of Eugene 350, the host organization for the Global Climate March Eugene version on November 28th and 29th. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange with comments and questions at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Mary, you mentioned sunflowers, and I noticed that you're trying to create the world's largest sunflower. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, what we decided was that people could be more involved in something if they were creating something really large together. So what we're doing is creating first an oil drop on the ground, an oil drip made out of human bodies. And the way we'll do that is that people will take part of the pipeline protest that we did here last spring. They'll take a piece of that or a garbage bag if we don't have enough of the pipeline capes left over. People will be using garbage bags and putting them kind of around their necks and then leaning over at such an angle that from the air, which is where we'll be filming from, it will register as an oily, black, big drip on the ground. And next to that, we'll have the word off in reclaimed sheets. So it'll be off fossil fuels and on clean energy. And so we'll start with that image. And then when we give the signal, we'll tell people to remove their garbage bags and reveal yellow tops that are underneath. We're asking people to wear T-shirts or some kind of top or raincoat or something that's yellow. So they'll remove the bag and then reform themselves into the shape of a sun. And we'll film that from above and then do kind of probably that'll take about 10 or 15 minutes to actually pull off that transition. And then we'll speed it up and send that video to world leaders and specifically to Governor Kate Brown, advocating that she use the power she has to say no to the Jordan Cove fracked gas export pipeline.
Let's talk about the major obstacles to not what you're trying to do this weekend, but what you're trying to do generally then, your efforts to stop Jordan Cove and just to get the message across about changing our patterns of use of fuels. What are the major obstacles to convincing people this is either a good way to go or it's a way to go that won't hurt us anyway?
Well, I would say one of the major obstacles has been the politicians, because the scientists have been telling us, they have been providing evidence, and now we know that 97% of the world's scientists agree that human-caused climate change is on the run. So one of the obstacles we need to deal with are our own politicians. I would say clearly another obstacle has been the fossil fuel corporations and the money that they hold and the power that they hold over the politicians. I also think we've been doing some research lately, and it's just there's something about our evolutionary human brain that is very slow to register catastrophes that are slow-moving and drug out. We're kind of wired to, you know, run away from the lion that's chasing us, but we're not wired in our brains to be looking at the long-term consequences of what the rising temperatures are are making happen on Earth.
So if something goes bang or growls, we're good about responding. But if it doesn't come with that sound effect, we tend to be a bit slower to respond.
I think that's part of the issue. And then I think finally, you know, one other obstacle that comes to mind is just the fact that when people understand this problem and understand the magnitude of it and the sort of overwhelmingness of it, then I think there are people that just kind of become a little bit overwhelmed and hopeless. And that's part of why we want to build this joy-filled mass movement, is to help people move out of that place of despair and hopelessness.
And I think it's important to say here that there are solutions that already exist, and there are people that are obstructing those solutions. So this, anytime we're discussing we as a species or we as people who are slow moving, I like to make the point that we actually have a lot of people all over the world, and even the conservative Republicans, many of them in the United States, don't know what to do. And I think part of that is, a large part of that is that there's been a campaign for a couple of decades now to confuse people about what the solutions are, what the problem is, what the solutions are, and what people can do about it. And part of what we're trying to say really loudly here is, we have solutions. We know the problem, and we know what to do about it. We need to keep fossil fuels in the ground. We need to stop subsidizing all of these oil industries. We need to stop building new infrastructure, and we need to completely transition to clean and renewable energy, which people are wanting to do, but they have to have the leaders and the government fund those programs and prioritize those programs. And the only way we're going to be able to do that at this point is through people power on the streets, be loud and tell each other, yes, we have solutions and we know where the problems are, and we need to fire the politicians that are obstructing those solutions.
All right, so Global Climate March, Eugene Edition, Saturday, 2 p.m. Where should they hook up with you if people want to join you?
At the federal courthouse, the old federal courthouse in Eugene is where we're going to begin, and that's 211 East 7th Avenue at the corner of 7th and Pearl. We'll start there. We're going to have a brief rally. We didn't want to keep people for too long on Thanksgiving weekend. We want to get them fired up with some speeches from Mayor Kitty Piercy and also from 5 different youth who are very, very active in trying to get their voices out there, asking people to support solutions for climate recovery. And then we'll be moving over through downtown and over the Ferry Street Bridge. And at 3 o'clock, we're going to be in Alton Baker Park, where we'll do our huge collaborative art.
Okay, that's the video project.
Okay,
I need to stop you there because we're almost out of time. I want to say thanks to Mary DeMocker, Patty Hine, and Deb McGee, the founders of Eugene 350. Best of luck on Saturday.